Welcome to Libre Lounge, a podcast about free software, free culture, and all the other interesting aspects of user freedom, with Christopher Lemmer-Weber and Serge Roklowski.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Serge.
Well, we're back after quite a break there.
Yeah, a lot of traveling, maybe too much traveling for my personal taste, but you know, a lot of good things came out of it. So overall, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, we were at FOSDEM and then at CopyleftConf. So FOSDEM, the European Free Software Conference, and the first CopyleftConf, a conference organized by Software Freedom Conservancy, focusing on the free software licensing and copyleft in particular, I think, is kind of their bend.
And the Wizard's Tower.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Wizard's Tower a little later. So I thought for people that haven't been to a free software conference that we would talk about what that experience was like. Like, what's it like going to a free software conference? What should you expect if you've never been to one?
So one thing that I think you and I both really enjoy about conferences, maybe, and actually it's probably the number one thing for me, is actually the human connection side of things. Spending time directly with people who are also excited about the same things that I'm excited about is, I think, what I'm really tend to enjoy a lot.
Yeah, because we're kind of solitary creatures in this free software movement, in that, you know, we spend a lot of time at our computers. Maybe we're developing, or even if we're communicating on mailing lists or IRC or whatever, you know, it's kind of solitary, and you know, you can feel like it's you against the world sometimes when it's just, you know, you on a computer working on your project. But now you have, well, in the case of FOSDEM, 8,000 other people who are similarly passionate about the same ideals and the same projects, and they have different experiences, but you have this commonality, and that's a really amazing energy, and it's really positive and affirming. So I agree, it's like the best part is just being there and being part of that community.
Yeah, and I think that so the other nice thing is, you know, I mean, so most conferences have you know, a number of talks and panels, and going to those talks and listening to those panels can be a really great way to learn things, and presenting in them can not only be a great way of sharing information, but also be a way of learning things, right? You know, teaching is sometimes the best way to learn. And so that, I mean, I think that that's on the book, like on the pamphlet, usually the biggest draw that people see firsthand is like, oh, look at all these cool talks you're going to see, though I'm not sure if that actually ends up being the most important kind of thing that I often take away from these conferences. What do you think?
Yeah, so I agree. It's you go to the conference because you're looking forward to these talks. You're looking forward to hearing about something that you probably already have experience in, right? So a project that you already know about, or at least have some familiarity with. And then you hang around and you find out there's a new project or a new technology that you had no idea was going on in that. And that's exciting and interesting and fun. And then, yeah, you kind of go from there. The thing that I really like is that, you know, you go to these conferences and you meet people that maybe you've been talking to for years and you've never had a chance to, you've been talking to online, right? You've emailed back and forth. You've done an IRC, maybe you've exchanged pull requests or whatever, and now you get a chance to you know, sit down in with them and talk with them, and you connect with them in a very different way, and that's exciting. And also, there are people, if you keep going, you're going to see the same people, and you're going to see those people year after year, and it feels a lot like a family reunion. You know, you're going and you're reconnecting and reaffirming your relationship in the community. And that's also really powerful. And then there's this great hallway, you know, the what people call the hallway track, right? And I think you can speak to that. I definitely had that experience. This was my first FOSDEM. And I had some of the best conversations just in the middle of a hallway, not actually attending a class. And I'm sure you had similar experiences.
Yeah, I mean, so this year, I mean, you and I both, we're not going to get into them in this particular episode, though maybe we'll pull some people in future episodes. I think that we got a lot of exciting conversations, especially around decentralized technology, with people who have worked on it and were like, oh man, this is like great material. And, you know, that hallway track is, you know, the place where that tends to happen. And I agree with you that oftentimes this ends up being a gathering place for friends. And there's even a downside to that, I think, actually, in that you can feel a lot of pressure when you go to a conference once, where you kind of feel like, oh, I've got to go back year after year. And I find, so here's what I find about conferences. I tend to find that every conference I go to, say the conference is a week long, I tend to find that it actually takes 3 weeks, because there's a week before of preparing talks and preparing travel and getting ready and everything. And then there's a week at the conference. And then the week afterwards, I'm usually kind of destroyed. So, but the nice thing is that there tends to be, it also, a lot of this main work that I do happens between conferences, but then at a conference tends to be when a lot of things congeal, like when a lot of, when I make connections that may have just really felt in the background for a while.
Yeah, that makes total sense, right? And it's also because you get that, you get the people there, and it's like a, you know, it's like a stew, right? Like all the pieces are in place and they're together, so something new is going to come out of it, and that absolutely makes a ton of sense.
So
I think we should talk about your Wizard's Tower, because I didn't attend that, so I'm interested to hear about it. But before we do that, we should mention that if you're listening before the end of March in 2019, that the two of us will be at Libra Planet, and that'll be March 23rd and 24th in 2019. And we were thinking that we got some amazing feedback from listeners at FOSDEM. People came up to mostly you, but also me, and talked about how much they love the show, which was really, really great to hear. And some people had some practical feedback, which was also amazing. So we were thinking, if people want to, we could have a little informal get together at Libra Planet. So if you're interested in that, it'd be great if you would email podcast@libralounge.org. And if we get a few people, we'll announce something that we'll all do. We'll all get together and hang out. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. We should clarify, Cambridge in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Yes. Not in the UK. I want to hear about this Wizard's Tower thing.
Right. So the Wizard's Tower is kind of a renaming in a certain sense. It was originally planned as an indie webcamp event, but then it kind of became its own thing. So I'm forgetting. So Sebastian Loss, I think, is how you pronounce his last name. I should know because I spent a week hanging out with him. Ended up planning this conference, and due to some kind of a leadership failure that was not Sebastian's, he and I ended up being the only ones there, which was really weird because this tower that we were in was in Vlissingen in the Netherlands, and it was this epic tower, like I think like 8 or 9 stories tall, with like 6 rooms that people can sleep in with 2 beds each.
So it was like an actual literal tower?
It was a literal tower. It used to be a water tower, and it looked amazing, and it was so cool to be in, and you could crawl to the top of it, and or like climb to the top of it and look out there, and there were like floors for conference rooms, and there was a kitchen that we cooked stuff in. You went to the basement, there was an arcade game, and there were a couple of, you know, so like it had everything, and it was so cool. And then there were just 2 of us. So we decided, okay, well, we're going to make the best of this, and we're going to do, you know, the original plan was always to do this hackathon, and we just went with it. And it was convenient timing because, you know, I knew that there was going to be an announcement. We'll get to what that announcement is later, but as some people know, I've kicked off this project called Sprightly, which is kind of trying to level up the Fediverse, is how I'm describing it. So trying to level up the decentralized / federated social web by adding these new features. And I pushed out the first demo of it called Golem. I think we don't want to talk about what Golem is. We'll save that for maybe the next episode.
We can even talk about it at the end. Let's talk about the experience. And I know you had briefly mentioned maybe wanting to do it again next year.
Yeah.
I think it'd be useful to talk about that. And then I think maybe we'll get into the guts of Gollum and Sprightly.
Okay. Yeah. So
at least not the guts, at least describe the project.
Yeah. So like I said, I thought the space was really cool. I think Sebastian did a really great job picking it out and organizing everything. Like I said, I think that everything Sebastian did was really well organized on his part. And actually we had this conversation afterwards, like, wow, this is an amazing space. Like, I've never been in a space that had, you know, if we did get a large number of people in this space and had like made it an intentional goal, like, let's get some cool, like a cool group of people in the free and open source software space, or maybe in the decentralized social web space or whatever, and then just have a week to just knock out some cool stuff. Like, I cannot imagine a cooler location.
Like a mass hackathon?
Yeah. And like the cool thing is that you can also sleep there. Because like, you know, there's the rooms there, and then there's also a kitchen. So like it has everything so that you can just focus and do everything in there. But if you want to go out and explore the beautiful city of Lissingen, you can also do that. So I really had a blast, and it was highly productive for both myself and Sebastian. We both knocked out, I knocked out a complete demo, and Sebastian's demo got really, really close, and actually did demonstrate the core of what they were doing. And I think we felt really excited about it. It was one of those, not all hackathons actually kind of deliver things in them, but this one, I really felt like we did. And it really made me feel like, wow, like I really want to repeat this experience.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And I feel like I wish I was there. I think probably anyone listening is probably thinking the same thing, which is, wow, I wish I was there. So I think it'd be great if you organized that next year, or got someone to organize that next year. I would definitely do my best to attend.
Cool. So do we want to talk about the demo, or do we want to just knock that off to the next episode?
Well, no, I think we should talk about it. But actually, you gave three talks in the span of 3 days. So I kind of think you should talk about those talks, right? I don't want to give them away, right? But I was at all three.
Right.
And you gave one about
wait. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, because there's something that happened at the end of the Wizard's Tower thing, which is like pretty significant, which was the grant announcement.
Oh, that's huge. Yeah, right. So you should talk about that first.
So
absolutely.
So when I knocked out this demo, and right at the same time that I was knocking out the demo and pretty much pushing it public, this Sprightly demo, which showed off, I'm going to just describe it very briefly. It basically described how to share messages over the Fediverse in a secure, peer-to-peer-ish way, where if one server went down, the contents could survive, but while still being private between the intended recipients. And so I got the demo working. And right as that happened, there was an announcement that came out about the Samsung Stack Zero grant, of which I'm a recipient. And Sprightly specifically is a recipient. So
that's amazing. Yeah. So if I understand, I mean, I read the announcement, and it sounds like you're going to get paid to work on this next generation federated web thing that you're working on. I mean, I'm being vague on purpose, right? Because I want you to talk about it. But you're getting actual money to work on this amazing next generation project.
That's right. So so the money is split out across 2 years. It's not a complete salary's worth of money on its own, but it is enough for me to be able to work on this full time with a small amount of contracting on the side. So I should be able to put in a full 40 hours per week on Sprightly. The cool thing is that, so what I applied for was to say, you know, look, there's all these things that the Fediverse can currently do and all these things it currently can't. You know, we don't have all as many of secure interactions as we like. The interactions aren't quite as rich as we'd like. But I have ideas on how to be able to do a lot of these things. And also, like, you know, we'd like it so that if, you know, a server goes down, that's not as big of a deal and stuff like that. So the idea behind Sprightly is that I have a lot of ideas on how to improve all these things, but the danger is trying to do them all at once sorry, could result in just vaporware, right? Like I never actually push out the project. So instead, in Sprightly, I'm going to release piece by piece independent demos that each show off a single concept on how to upgrade the Fediverse, along with both documentation and running code, so that people implementing things on the Fediverse can be like, oh, look at this next thing I can do if I just implement the ideas from this demo. And each demo should be like simple enough to understand it in like an evening. You know, you just sit down and you're like, I want to understand Golem. You should be able to just sit down that evening, read through the docs, read through the code, and be like, okay, I've got it. So that's the general idea. The other goofy thing, and so Sarah, do you know I get nervous every time I bring this up, even though I keep finding that people tend to find it a little bit less ridiculous and a little bit more exciting than I'm afraid they're going to react. But there's the kind of driver of the project, which is, you know, what we're going to aim for releasing, which is a decentralized, you know, federated social game. And kind of like a MUD, basically.
Yeah. So for those people who may not have ever used a MUD, MUDs were this amazing experience in the 80s, and I used them in the 90s when I was first getting on the internet. And for anyone who's played a game like Zork or any other of these, the genre called interactive fiction, right? So you're interacting with this world all through text and typing and reading. A MUD was like that, only with all of this personal social interaction in addition to the adventure. And it was really exciting for all kinds of different reasons. I mean, I remember, you know, I'd be fighting a monster and then simultaneously talking to my friends and whispering, you know, telepathically whispering to them about, you know, what was going on in my real life while I'm fighting this monster, while I'm also strategizing about where we're going to meet. And often these games were programmable, and you could build objects in the game that were interactive, right? You could make something that was unique and you could share it and give it away or whatever. And like, I remember, one of the first MUDs that I was in, I got invited by some people that I met in the computer lab, and they invited me to this MUD, and I went into this room, and it was like a bar, a pub, that you'd find in a D&D adventure, right? So it was, there were tables and there were people at all these tables, and it was snowing outside. There was a roaring fireplace, and everyone was speaking in a language that I couldn't understand. It was all babble and it was all garbled, and I was really freaked out. And then, in the game, a guy like grabs me, and it says like so-and-so grabs you and shoves a fish in your ear, and the fish wriggles, and it says like the fish wriggles into your ear and you can feel it squirming, and suddenly you can hear and understand everyone. And it was a babble fish, and it was so fascinating and interesting and exciting. And I also remember at that same, you know, at that same tavern, like R2-D2 was just there and like, you know, just hanging out. And it was really a unique experience that nothing has come close to. And so my understanding of this project that you're working on is that you're going to make something like this that everyone can build and interact with like they can on the Fediverse, like they can on Mastodon or PixelFed or all those services, right?
Yeah, so that's the goal. I think we'll save the details of how that can be accomplished for another episode. Sure. But I will say also, if that sounds, you know, overwhelmingly complex, like for us to deliver, you know, then actually it's not a big deal in my view if we fail on that vision, though of course I'm going to try my best to not do that. In the sense that a lot of these times when people have tried to build these kinds of large distributed games, something really exciting ends up actually coming out of it anyway. And I think with the demo that I released already, we're starting to see, I think somebody who pays close attention can start to see, oh, like I can see how this builds toward that vision. So I'm.
Yeah, but I'm excited. And I think anyone who's hearing you, you know, who cares about the culture that we've built, and I mean the free software culture and the user freedom culture and just geeky culture in general, like understands the grok, the power and expression, you know, the expressiveness of this experience, and is excited for this project and for this grant that's allowing you to work on this. This is really amazing, Chris.
Yeah, I'm really excited and I'm really thankful that I got it, and I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure I deliver well on it.
So let's talk more about things you did. You gave two talks at FOSDEM and one at Copyleft Conf. And so I attended your first talk. I attended all of them, actually. So your first talk that I attended was the one on Racket and Guile. So I'll admit that I am not at this point an avid Lisper. I used to use Lisp a little bit, but haven't for quite a long time. And there's, I guess, in the land of Lisp, which I don't mean the book, I mean the ecosystem of Lisp programming languages, there's an offshoot called Scheme. And then I guess there's kind of two most popular schemes at this point, right? One being Guile, the Guile project coming out of the GNU project. So it's GNU Guile. And the other being Racket, which used to be called PLT Scheme. Back when I used Lisp, it was called PLT Scheme, and I guess it's been renamed Racket for a while. And you're an experienced Guiler who, I guess, picked up Racket and has been using it for a while. And you talked about your experience with that.
So we're going to link to the videos because they're out. So if you want to watch them in detail, you can. So I'm a big enthusiast of both languages and both communities. And actually, in many ways, this talk was something I was very nervous about giving, and because I didn't want to upset people who were already in the Guile community, a lot of which are my friends, by being like, oh, you know, like, I didn't want it to sound like, oh, well, you know, Guile's the past, Racket's the future, or something like that, because that's not my intention or my thought. Basically the talk was about, my friend Arne described it afterwards as, I showed off why Racket delivers a lot of shiny things that we don't have directly in Guile that may make it a lot easier for people to pick up and start running with faster. But Guile still has a lot of things that are also really valuable, such as the, Geeks Package Manager and stuff like that. And I think the real goal of that talk was to try to get both communities to think about, well, you know, both of our communities are doing such cool things. How can we work together better?
Yeah, that makes sense. It was a great talk, and we'll absolutely link to it in the show notes. And then the other talk at FOSDEM was a panel, and you did a lot of speaking at that panel. Like, I would say that you were talking majority of the time, but it was a talk about ActivityPub, and so it makes sense that you would have a lot of strong views about that.
Yeah, and I kind of awkwardly performed two roles that you really shouldn't perform both at once, which is I was both kind of the moderator and a speaker, and then I kind of took over a number of things, and I apologize to my co-panelists for that. But the main reason for that is that the person who was going to moderate it couldn't make it. We opened it up with a number of questions between, you know, we had somebody there from GoFed, we had somebody there from PixelFed, and somebody there from FunkWhale. And it wasn't PixelFed. It was
you had someone from Rightly,
right?
Someone from
You're correcting me on my PeerTube. I don't think we had somebody from PeerTube, but you're right. So we had somebody from Right.as, and we had somebody from FunkWhale, and we had someone from GoFed, and then there is me. And we started off kind of with a few questions between each other and then threw it at the audience. I got a number of I had quite a bit of conversation after the fact where, you know, some people were a little bit surprised and really intrigued with how some things went, especially the conversation about why ActivityPub's server-to-server protocol has taken off and its client-to-server hasn't yet, and whether or not there's some opportunities there by doing both. I know the GoFed person had a lot of thoughts on that. And there's just a blog post that came out recently that was referencing that we can link to. called Mastodon is not just a server and why that's not necessarily a good thing. And this woman does a really nice breakdown about, you know, the thing that we could have. And so it's nice to see somebody, you know, watch the panel and walk away and keep, you know, thinking about those things. That's the kind of thing that I think you really want out of these things, is to have the audience engaged enough to continue the conversation after, you know, the actual event.
Yeah, I agree. So then, after FOSDEM was over, we had another conference, like the next day, CopylehtConf, which we mentioned, run by the Software Freedom Conservancy. And you gave there were two tracks, but you gave essentially the second talk. A lot of speakers referenced your talk afterwards, which was very cool. And it was about the ways in which this, especially with the Sprightly project, where you have the idea of these objects that live independently running on the network. Sorry about the siren there, because I am in New York City. But you know, you talked about how you'd have these objects and they can kind of live independently on the network. It kind of reminded me of the Matrix, right? And at the same time, we in the free software community have embraced the Allegro GPL, the AGPL for network services, and how those two things are not necessarily incompatible, but they present some challenges, right? Is that the right take home lesson from your talk?
Yeah, I think so. I'm still a supporter of the AGPL. I've used it for my own projects, and I think that, you know, for quite a few projects that have picked it up, it makes a lot of sense. The AGPL, we should say, is the thing that makes it different from the GPL is it also adds a requirement for that if you serve an application running it over the network, that you also have the same requirement to distribute the program. So under the AGPL's terms. So that I think makes a lot of sense in general. The way in which things get end up complicated is I kind of walk into in the talk into a couple of things. As you mentioned, you know, if a lot of your objects are kind of, so there's this idea of the actor model, which is that you have all these objects that are, instead of your program running just like on as a single program in, you know, on a single process where, you know, just functions are just calling each other as subroutines, you actually can imagine every object is kind of living its own little life and is only communicating by sending messages, kind of in the same way that you know, like you and I send emails to each other. And if you break up every object in your program that way, then things get kind of awkward around, like the GPL FAQ says, well, you know, where does the GPL boundaries apply? You know, there's this idea of arm's length. And then the question is, well, what happens when every object in your system is kind of at arm's length of each other, especially if you can split all those objects across a bunch of different machines?
Yeah, it's really exciting. So we'll link directly to your talk, because you've got awesome slides and there's a lot more, and you can get in, and in talk you get into that.
I won't get into it, but I guess since I said half of it, I'll mention the other half, which is that things also get complex if you kind of do an Emacs-y type environment where there's very little distinction between configuration and code. And some of the stuff that I'm exploring goes down that route. And then that gets really weird if somebody has private code that may reference stuff that really does link into the program, but they really, for good reason, shouldn't be sharing. Like, for example, if you had programmed in a local block list that really was code in that block list, maybe it's for your own it's important for your protection to actually not be sharing that block list. So, as you said, the talk gets into more details. So, if somebody's interested, they can look at it. I don't think the video has been released yet, but it might be by the time this episode comes out. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I hope it will be. And frankly, if it's not, what we'll do is we'll announce it. We'll announce when we have that talk. Once we have the URL for the video, because the talk that I was really inspired by was the keynote by Molly DeBlanc, where she talked about. And again, I'm not going to do it justice. She talked about how software freedom is at its core about empowerment. And she talked about how this empowerment needs to affect marginalized communities and how you can't have true freedom without free software. And that's a topic that we've touched on in previous episodes. It's a topic that I think is a core belief and a core passion for the two of us. Hearing her talk, I got a little emotional, kind of started to tear up a little bit. And I'm really want to link to that talk when it comes out. So whether it's out by the time that this episode comes out or not, I think we'll definitely link to it.
Yeah.
So we should probably start to wrap up because we've been talking for a while. I think you're right about the Sprightly thing. We should talk about it in a future episode.
Okay.
Is there anything else we want to talk about in terms of FOSDEM? Maybe, you know, really quickly, if there was any specific talks that you thought were interesting or any topics you want to cover before we wrap up.
Yeah, two quick things. I wanted to mention, that I was interviewed for a student radio out of Slovenia, and I don't know how to pronounce the name of the program, but we can link to it in the show notes. And the two hosts of it were, like, really great. Really exciting to hear how excited they were, as students about free software and to see this keyboard that they had 3D printed themselves and plugged into their computer, and had these old school, keyboard things like the Space Cadet keyboard features. That was really cool. And, you know, it was also really inspiring to me to see, I sound so old, but, to see, people from, I think, the upcoming generation of, free software folks getting really into this stuff. And so I have a talk that I'd like to mention and talk about, but maybe before I do, you want to mention the talk that you got really excited about.
Yeah, so the talk that I got excited about was about GNU Mess.
And I think it's Mace.
Mace? Okay, I'm going to butch. If I try to have the author's name, I have it in front of me, but I am going to totally butcher it here.
There.
It's Yannick? Okay. I was going to say his last name, but I can't. I'm sorry. But Yannick had this amazing talk where he brought up this issue, which is that when you're compiling software, when you're taking the source code and turning it into something that the machine can understand – every compiled program for many, many, many years came out of another compiler, right? So how do you compile a compiler? Well, with a compiler. And how do you compile it? Well, you get an older compiler. And not only that, but like, how do you run a compiler? Well, you need a bunch of binaries. So you need binaries to run the compiler. And so now you have this circular problem of, well, how do you ever have a completely 100% free software operating system in which you know that every byte of code and memory is truly secure? And he talks about how he's solving this problem by building both a tiny little compiler in order to build the bigger compiler, but a small one that you can understand, and also a free environment that bootstraps up just enough to run the compiler.
Right.
So kind of has this circular system where it's like, okay, you can understand just this code and you could understand the assembly that comes out of it and potentially the machine code just because it's so tiny. And then you can use that to build the real, libc and, the GCC compiler, et cetera. So that was really, really fun and exciting.
For those who don't know, I highly recommend reading the paper, Reflections on Trusting Trust, which is inspired a lot of people in this domain, which basically says, hey, if you have a compiler that you intentionally build a backdoor into, it can add that backdoor to all future compilers, and it can be almost impossible to find. And so the way that Mace is trying to get around it is that it's what's really fun to me about it is that you've got a scheme interpreter that has a tiny C compiler built into it, and then a C program that can compile the scheme interpreter, and they just can compile each other. And so that's just a really delightful for me. And I know there was a slide that you really enjoyed in particular, which is how he explained the problem.
Yeah, but then we should move on. But he talked about this problem of kind of this idea that the binary is this black box, right? Like, we don't really understand how these binaries work. It's kind of mystery. It's kind of magic, right? And he likened it to the problem of a recipe for yogurt, right? So how do you make yogurt? Well, you get some milk and you add some yogurt, and then you get more yogurt. And that's the problem that we in the free software world, and actually all computer science world, are in right now, which is that well, how do you compile a compiler? Well, you boot up an operating system and run your compiler against it. So he's creating the system that we can kind of break out of that cycle.
And hopefully it'll be directly applied in Geeks soon, so that we can have, you know, the first fully self-bootstrapped distribution. So yeah, I guess I should mention my favorite talk, and then we should close it up, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So my favorite talk is I mentioned Arne, and I can't remember how to pronounce his last name, but he gave a talk on Wisp, which unfortunately was a talk right before you came in the room, Serge. But it was really amazingly presented. And actually, Arne missed FOSDEM a couple years ago and asked me to present his talk on his behalf about Wisp, and I did that. But then this time, Arne gave a much more updated, here's the current state of Wisp thing, and I don't know. So the whole idea is that a lot of people are scared of Lisp because it's got all these parentheses, and what Wisp does is it's still, you can write any Lisp program using Wisp as long as it's, you know, kind of parentheses-based, but instead it has Python-like indentation-based syntax. And that's really cool, and even though I had already known about it and seen it, the way that he presented it was so nice. So I you know, every now and then you see a presentation and just not just the content, but the way that the content is presented gets you so excited. And that was this talk for me this year.
Oh, that sounds exciting. I'll definitely watch that. I mean, there have been attempts to make Lisp-like languages that don't use parentheses.
Right, but usually they're the oldest, completely new language implementation. They're not like, they can just be any Lisp program. They're like,
oh, I see. So this is like a pre-compiler to another
Lisp. It just basically hides the parentheses in indentation.
That's cool.
So yeah, if you wanted to write your Emacs Lisp config without any parentheses in it, you could do it. And stuff like that. It's really cool. So that's it. I think we wanted to wrap up. It looks like we're just a minute away from 40 minutes. So,
So we'll be really quick. So we got enormous energy and feedback at FOSDEM, and we also have gotten some amazing emails from listeners. So thank you, listeners, and we love your feedback. So if you want to write us, podcast@librelounge.org. You can also find us on the Fediverse at Libre Lounge, at floss.social. We're at Libre Lounge on Twitter. You can find us on IRC. We're on Freenode. Freenode, excuse me. And we are at hash Libre Lounge on Freenode. And we love people that participate. I mean, you don't have to, but we would love to hear from you. Feedback, you know, compliments, complaints, concerns, questions. We love it all. So come join us, hang out with us, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Libre Lounge. You can find and subscribe to us at LibreLounge.org. This podcast is released under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 4.0 International License. Our theme music is Bossa Nova by Joss, which is waived into the public domain under CC0 and which you can find on opengameart.org. If you'd like to support Chris Weber's work on this and other user freedom projects, you can donate at patreon.com/CWEBBER. Thanks for listening. See you next time.